Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Monday, December 2nd, 2019. The air in Nashville is cold, and there are some snow flurries bouncing about. Beth and I returned yesterday from a Thanksgiving trip to Cincinnati. While we were away, we had a lightning strike, which took the top out of a tulip tree along the property line with our neighbor. So I've spent this morning chasing down replacement cable boxes, which were blown out in the lightning storm. Back in 1958, my family pulled up roots from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and transplanted itself to Cincinnati, Ohio. This was just in time for me to start first grade at St. Monica's Elementary School, and so I was about 7 years old. Our first residence in Cincinnati was on Clifton Avenue, immediately across the street from a wonderful city park called Burnet Woods, and adjacent to the campus of the University of Cincinnati. My experiences at Burnet Woods as a kid have turned out to be a hugely important in my life, in my lifelong interest in the out-of-doors. I remember participating in a nature study program at that park, and the huge emphasis on tree identification continues to pay dividends for me today. My brother and I spent our summers roaming that park. We knew every nook and cranny and every large beech tree. A couple of years ago, I started hearing rumblings of a proposed development in this park, which greatly concerned me. There was a proposal to use a portion of the parkland to construct an arts and cultural center of some sort. Fortunately, some concerned citizens stepped up to oppose the use of the parkland for that project. A new organization was formed called Preserve Burnet Woods. Ultimately, the City Park Commission of Cincinnati decided against permitting encroachment into the park. This was in large part due to the advocacy of the Preserve Burnet Woods group. My guest today is Cynthia Tuval, who is the president of the Preserve Burnet Woods organization, a volunteer who, together with her all-volunteer board, are continuing their efforts advocating for more effective resource management of this very special park. And so I hope you'll enjoy this interview with Cynthia Tuval. Cynthia Tuval, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me.
It's great to be with you today. For our listeners, we are sitting in a small conference room here at the Clifton Branch Library, directly across the street from Burnet Woods in Cincinnati, Ohio. And it's a rainy day, kind of a gloomy day.
It's a good day to be inside.
Exactly. So Cynthia, I am most interested in talking with you today about what you're doing with the Preserve Burnet Woods group, organization, not for profit. And I want to let my listeners hear a little bit about what you're doing. I'm so excited to see your posts on Facebook and all the things that are going on. But first, it's kind of traditional in this program to hear about how my guests have come into parks and conservation, and you're doing it as a volunteer, I understand. Mm-hmm. But tell us about yourself, your little bit of your history, and how you got interested in parks and conservation.
I'm actually a little bit of a late bloomer to that topic. As a kid, I had a lot of allergies and things where I needed to be inside reading books, and of course that was beneficial in one way. But I didn't really get to spend a lot of time outside. And then somewhere in my early 20s, I started dating a guy that's a bit of an outdoor person, and he likes to go hiking and whatnot. So that was part of my introduction, but I was still very much a on the sidewalk, on the paved road kind of park person.
Okay.
And really didn't go out onto trails. That wasn't something I was enjoying a whole lot for the experience I was having. And then at some point in my running career, I switched away from pavement. Some friends said, hey, come trail running with us. And I started into trail running as a hobby. And that pretty much changed everything. Once you get out onto the trails, like away from the immediate car parking areas of parks, it gets very quiet, it gets peaceful, and you start to see things that, like different types of birds and trees that you're just not gonna find in any type of urban area, which is where Burnett Woods is located, is in an urban area. It's a very special place in the urban area. But I started to discover this quiet space, and I'm a very type A person. So the quiet space resonated, and then I started trying to find ways to spend more time. And when you realize what a gift that is, the rest of the conservation kind of begins to follow along, recognizing that somebody needs to take responsibility for these spaces and give them a little protection to make sure, you know, some people look at a nice tree area and go, hey, that's a great space, and you know, birds and wildlife, and other people look at it and think, wow, that's undeveloped land. And so, you know, we have to, the more you get out into nature, the more you realize those green spaces are important, and Fantastic. We need them to be green spaces.
So are you a native Cincinnatian?
Not by birth, no, but I went to high school here. So that's the most important thing, isn't it? Like everybody here.
Well, I have to ask. I have to ask, which high school then?
Walnut Hills.
Okay, so you...
Proud graduate.
Yeah, I went to a neighboring school. I went to Purcell, which is just a block or two away from Walnut Hills. So, well, okay, that tells me all I need to know about you. So let's describe Burnett Woods to our listeners, who many of which are not familiar with Cincinnati. Describe it for us.
I'll tell you, one of my board members uses the analogy that Burnett Woods is the heart and lungs of this area. And I think that's a beautiful analogy because I call it the donut hole, just to give people a visual. It is surrounded by a university. There are five different hospitals, University of Cincinnati on one side, Cincinnati State on another. It's got this whole area of concrete and urban development around it. And in the middle is this incredible green space that has old growth trees in it. It has trails, just big shady spaces, a lake that is the stormwater retention for all of UC. So it's got an important role of function for the area in the midst of providing all of this great tree canopy and carbon mitigation. But it's also, and this is part of what makes it super special, an important birding area as designated by Audubon. And part of that means that in all of these migrant birds that are coming through find Burnett Woods to be a very attractive space because of the incredible habitat it has in it. So it's a...
Doing a little bit of research before coming to today's interview, I subscribe to a thing called newspapers.com, and it gives me the ability to go and look at the old Cincinnati papers. And Burnett Woods looked like it got created as a city park about in the 1870s or so, and originally was much bigger than the park that is there today. But now it's about 90 acres of parkland, as you say, a small lake. And we walked, Beth and I walked yesterday on most of the trails in the park, which are trails that I walked when I was 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. And we do have old growth forests there, hickory and oak and beech. Trees
is an amazing beech tree population in that park.
Right. And of course, the beech tree is the classic indicator of the old growth forest. Mm-hmm. It's because it's the last to come to maturity. But it is truly an old growth forest, which is about maybe a third of the land mass of the 90 acres is in forest.
Yes.
And so you have the lake and you have some open areas. A bandstand, which is a wonderful old feature of the park,
Absolutely.
So for listeners that are interested, go and just do a Google image search for Burnet Woods in Cincinnati, and you'll see some pretty pictures. The Burnet Woods Preserve Burnet Woods organization came into being, I guess, because of some threats that were on the horizon for the park. Is that a politically correct way to say that?
Yes. Tiptoeing around, there were some really good people that might not have had the best idea of a location to put buildings inside the park.
Okay.
And nothing wrong, like the organizations that wanted to do development are good. They have good purpose, and I don't think it was any malintent on their part.
Right.
But I don't think they understood that the park has this incredible value until we had the opportunity to show them. And it took us about just over 6 months, 8 months of a lot of neighborhood tension and conversations and just trying everything we could think of to get the word out about what an amazing resource this park is and why a 30,000 square foot building had no place in it.
Right.
As you mentioned, the park was already had already been down to, it's actually 89.3 acres.
Right.
And at one point it had been twice the size. It actually extended across the entire University of Cincinnati campus, which is sizable. It's a $300+ million university. It's a very large campus.
Right.
And all of that campus was once part of Burnet Woods. So there were early, in the 1890s, there were early intentions of putting McMicken Hall and some of the larger buildings on that land. But then it just kind of kept creeping. And the last packet went in, I believe, the 1950s, which is what created DAP, the Design, Architecture, Art, and Planning Program.
Yeah, which is the neighbor right across the street from the park, right?
Exactly. Right. So you can actually look from a window in DAP over to Burnet Woods and have this great view.
Right.
And part of what they were planning to put into Burnet Woods was a cultural arts center. And so we were kind of defending that, going, wait a minute, the university has one right across the street.
Right.
And now there's a new sculpture studio going in catty corner to the park as well. So there is an arts basis already in place there that need was met. But
so you are a 501c3 type organization that was formed in order to do the advocacy on behalf of the park and preservation of the park.
Correct.
When faced with this threat of encroaching development, but the park board thankfully decided against that development, but your organization is continuing.
Yes, one of the interesting developments that took place is we were allowed to present to the park board twice in 2018, once in August and once in December. The August meeting was through a community engagement session. And before that session took place, which was actually before we were even a nonprofit, before our papers had been filed, we were still about 40 to 45 people that were getting together to collaborate. And we sat down in a room and said, okay, you know, what's the longevity? What's the long game here? Because this park does need help. And if we're only in this to say no to this design idea and then walk away, that might not be the right thing to do. We need to make sure that if we are who we say we are in this process, we can't just disappear once the vote is concluded, regardless of which direction it takes. The park still needs the skill sets that we have in terms of environmental conservation and invasive species removal, those types of activities. So regardless of which way the vote went, we were committed that we were going to be there the day after the vote. And now we're almost a year after the vote, and we've had a very exciting year. I'm proud of what we've accomplished.
Well, you know, in parks and recreation in America today, friends groups is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know in Tennessee, our state parks all have a friends organization. And they're doing great things. And so I'm thrilled to see your organization doing that for Burnet Woods, because it does need some help. As we walked through the park yesterday, and I've noticed before, this park has been degraded in a great deal by the invasive exotic species, particularly bush honeysuckle and privet hedge, and bad winter creeper. Yeah. all over the floor of the forest and parts of that forest. So you all have a plan to work on that.
We have been innovating, not only just putting in some sweat equity. We've been innovating on how do we get more people with knowledge to help, because when you're cutting things, cutting honeysuckle isn't as simple as you think. One, it's very labor intensive. So you need volunteers that are willing to get itchy and get dirty and, you know, feel a little beat up at the end of the day. But it's also very similar to other important things, such as saplings of many tree varieties, if you don't know your trees very well. Spice bush is another one that's important to our warbler migration. So if you aren't familiar with cutting honeysuckle, you can get in there and start to cut things that are of benefit and should be there, and end up doing a bit of damage. And so what we realized in some of the volunteer efforts that had been mitigated before were where we had like 50 people coming in, and I say we because we always collaborate with parks, but those were parks organized efforts. A lot of these get corporate sponsors or student sponsors, and that's great. It's great to see that enthusiasm. But if you don't know what you're doing, you can do a lot of damage, especially at certain times of year too, with the spring ephemerals, things like that coming through. So you got to be careful. And so what we did was say, okay, we don't just need volunteers two or three times a year. We need them several times a month if we can get them. And we need them to be informed and know what they're cutting. So we've started what we call our Habitat Heroes program. And we do training days. We spend about 8 to 10 months working with Cincinnati Parks to develop a training program. And we have some excellent leaders that are knowledgeable in the field, leaders in horticultural management, native plants. Just, we couldn't ask for better experts to be developing this program for us. And they come in and they teach for 2 hours, usually ahead of a work day. And if you can come for that training session, then you're going to learn about what we're going to be doing, cutting, you know, any type of mitigation, whether it's to pull Yonamis or cut honeysuckle. And people who we have found that the people who come to the training sessions and who are informed are far more effective. Two sessions we did last year, we were able to clear about 4.5 acres with 13 volunteers across 2 Saturday mornings.
So how are you identifying the places where you're concentrating your efforts? How is that strategy being worked out?
Parks has had their own plan in place. And then, like I said, we've been lucky to have a few regional experts working with us that have gone into the park, and they will walk through the park every week and take notes and make maps. And then they take their own notes about, you know, what's the highest risk area right now.
I want to hear, tell me, what's their theory? Where are the places that you're focusing your attention?
Right now, we are working on, we just did the area all around the lake.
Okay.
Because that was a security and vulnerability area for safety. So we got that, the honeysuckle around that area cut. And then we started going up the ridge line directly across from UC. And we've been working on that ridge line because there are significant old trees up in that area. The understory hasn't been disturbed. There's not hiking trails back there. It's just had honeysuckle left unmitigated and completely ignored up there for a long time. And what we have noticed, the porcelain berry has gotten in there as well and started to climb those old trees. And we had one section we were working on, like when we first walked up to it, it looked like a wall, like just a wall of green. You couldn't see anything through it. And so looking at the trees, you're going, that's going to take those old trees down. they're not going to get what they need, not only from a resource competition in terms of groundwater and nutrients,
yeah, but it'll eventually overtop the tree.
Yeah, they can't get sunlight anymore.
Exactly.
So we went in, and the first session we spent just getting the honeysuckle out and then nipping that porcelain berry down at the bottom of it. Give it 2 weeks to die off, so you're not pulling rubbery vines off of loose trees. And then we came back 2 weeks later when it was crisper and we're able to pull it down. Mm-hmm. And it was like pulling curtains off of a window. I mean, you could start to see through there.
Right.
And the second day that we went up, I actually went, that was in November, and it was just after fall migration had really started to pass away and die down. But I went back up later in the day. After the work crew was gone, I was like, let me walk back through there, make sure we didn't leave anything, that everybody got their water bottle. We didn't drop any tools, no litter. I'm very committed to litter mitigation in the park. So I went back up there, and it was like Disney. There were so many birds, just the local flocks that were checking out everything that we had done, because they couldn't fly through that area. The porcelain berry, when it's climbing the trees, and the honeysuckle undercutting everything, it doesn't leave room for the birds to fly anymore.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. It was incredible.
So tell me what the future looks like in the best of your dreams, in terms of that. How many years is it going to take to eradicate 90 acres of, well, not 90 acres, because that's not all infested, but what's the time horizon for effectively controlling this in that park?
A good follow-up plan is going to be at least 4 to 5 years of coming back in and continually readdressing areas that we've worked until we stop seeing the spread. But we know we're going to have to always be on top of it.
Sure.
It's honeysuckles in this area, and it's not going away. Same with Yonimus. It's extremely difficult to get rid of, and it's going to be a constant battle against it.
Right.
But as we get people that are more informed about it, we'll hopefully have more volunteers. So the follow-up efforts will hopefully lessen. The initial mitigation efforts, we have to pace out, because you don't want to change too much too fast, especially in a high bird-friendly area. If we came through and treated things too quickly, I mean, we're still talking about nesting territories and hunting territories. We've got a healthy raptor population. So when you change...
Particularly owls, do you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Cooper's hawks as well.
Okay.
We've got a red tail that comes through on a regular basis. So we've got some Fantastic. Healthy birds that we need to consider what they need. It's not just a visual human problem. We need to move things at a pace that the wildlife can understand as well.
Well, let's talk about that. And you've mentioned birds several times, but we're talking about an old growth forest in an urban area in America. That is a very, very rare thing.
I think it's a pretty big deal that we've got this in our midst. Yeah. I'm grateful that I'd be within walking distance on a regular basis.
In Nashville, the city of Nashville has just recently acquired an old growth forest area. It's kind of on the edge of the county, and it's technically in the city, but it's not really an urban area like this is here. And it's a very special place, but I don't know of any others in America where you have a classically old growth forest right in the middle of the city. And so you are seeing migratory birds coming through at different times of the year that use this park year after year.
Correct.
Tell us more.
We are known for our warblers, actually. All the different little warblers. We get birders from all over the city that come around to shoot, or I should say pictures, take pictures, not shoot birds. we don't do that. But we have this amazing warbler variation that they stick around. They come through in usually about April or May, depending on the weather. And then they'll hang out to regain their migration weight. Some of them stick around and nest. And it's this just wave of color in terms of feathers that comes through the park in early spring. And then once again, it usually starts to pick up in late August and runs through September. And it is amazing. All these things that are so tiny, they're smaller than sparrows, they're faster than sparrows, and they've got these incredible little voices. So it's
like, now, do we have any kind of banding programs or anything like that going on in the park?
We don't band right now.
Okay.
What we have been doing is eBird, if you're familiar with that program.
Well, tell our listeners about what that is.
eBird is an online program that has an app, and it is usually run, you know, like if you're a birder, even just a backyard birder, you can go into this app, create a profile, and begin to register, you know, I saw this many birds of this type in this park, you know, or in my backyard, and begin to really make a record of what you see. And they do encourage photography as part of that so that it's scientifically documented and can be legitimized what you've seen. In Burnet Woods, we've been able to list 171 different species of birds.
Fantastic.
In this little tiny park. And I'll go ahead and say that important birding area designation is doubly important because in all of Hamilton County, with the incredible acreage dedicated to green space within Hamilton County, there's only one other space that has that designation.
Now, which is that?
And that's the Great Miami River Basin.
Okay.
Which is about 20,000 acres, as I
recall.
My.
Oh, my goodness.
It's not common for a space as small as Burnet Woods to get that designation. And so we just want to make sure that we're creating a habitat that helps that be maintained as something that we treasure, respecting those birds.
As walking around yesterday in the park, I did see deer signs in the park. A scrape is what I saw on a tree. So we had a buck of some sort over there scraping his antlers on a tree. Known to be deer population in the park?
Not overpopulated.
Okay.
There are areas in the surrounding communities, particularly Clifton Gaslight, which is just north of the park. There are a lot of reports of deers,
right.
And they actually have the Clifton Urban Deer Management Program that they work with. I guess it's a larger problem in Mount Storm, proximity to Mount Airy, that type of thing. Not a huge problem in Burnet. Right now, I know this buck you are talking about because I've seen him.
Okay.
Usually we'll get a couple that will wander around here and there, but they're not not a huge problem and not the most frequent visitors because of that concrete space around.
Right, and there's
the
not really a place for them to bed down in the park. So let me ask you this. You are a 501c3 organization, and you have a very... I'd say a very large board group. Tell us about that group. You don't need to name names necessarily, or if you want to, you can. But tell us about the characteristics of that group.
It is just a privilege. I kind of get a little choked up because there's the outpouring of heart and the willingness to give knowledge and time in this group of people is out of this world. It's like nothing I've ever experienced before. We have more than 12 of our board members are university professors in different disciplines across three different universities. And that includes botany, history, biology, geography, mathematics, English, and environmental studies. Like, we've got a gamut of professors. We also have a lawyer on our board as well, who is very well known in the Environmental Conservation Network in Cincinnati.
Okay.
We have some concerned community members, which is probably the category I fall into. I am not an expert naturalist by any means, and that's not my background, but I care, and it's near my home, and I want to take care of it. So there's a bunch of us that fall into that category. And then we actually have some environmentalists that are active in, like I said, we've got various disciplines of horticultural management that are professionally employed as landscapers, landscape architects, native plant experts that are either community members or view this space to be incredibly important. And so they, as soon as we all started to form out of actually a birding group, they stepped in and said, we want to be part of this. And so there are 27 members on our board right now.
That's a huge board.
It is a huge board. And we debate in healthy fashion about a lot of things.
Okay.
But somehow, as long as we always can tie it back to the park, we find our common ground there.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful thing. Everybody gives so much of their time and just crazy amounts of effort. It's usually two or three of our members meet probably twice a week just outside of our normal board meetings and work days just to plan the invasive removal efforts.
Okay.
And the emails with parks and all of that. It takes just crazy amounts of time.
You all, I've admired, just looking at your Facebook page, you have some sort of program activity going on pretty much every week, whether it's yoga in the park or a runner's group or a nature hike. Or tell us more about your programming and what your plans are there.
What we started with was taking a look at the skill sets that we had and the people that were willing to volunteer their time.
Okay.
So that started, like I said, our birthplace was actually out of Cincinnati Birders before Preserve Burnet came to be. And so bird watching was the natural fit for the park. We do that. We were doing it every week, but then once migration season ended, we realized looking at our numbers from last year that it would be better to do it every other week.
Okay.
And it also gives our bird watching leaders a chance to go other places as well. So that's, we do that every other week now. We have Dr. Dennis Conover from UC who comes over almost every single week on Sundays.
And what is his specialty?
Botany.
Botany, okay.
He is an incredible resource on botany. He's been studying Burnet Woods for more than 30 years and charting growth. And he knows every inch and every plant growing in that park without any doubt.
Perhaps I need to interview him the next time I come to Cincinnati.
He is a very interesting person with a just crazy amount of knowledge to share. And he's generous with his time. He comes and walks through the park for about 2 hours every Sunday afternoon. And he will just stream of consciousness. This is what's growing and this is how you identify it. And when we first started talking about doing the botany walks, one of his insistences was he said he wanted to do it through all four seasons because that's how you really learn a plant is through all four seasons. And he has maintained his commitment to that with just such an open heart. Other endeavors aren't as successful. The running group is my baby because I'm a runner and I like to run the trails through the park. It kind of makes sure I touch every trail in the park at least once a week to make, you know, sure see what I see. And I had not too many people join me on that one, but I tend to run very early in the morning, and I think that might be a special brand of runner right there.
Well, I encourage you to continue with your programming efforts. My experience in parks is that programming is what makes it happen.
I'll also acknowledge we are not responsible for the yoga. That was a yoga studio across the street has been using Burnet Woods as a resource to teach their yoga classes for years, and they've continued doing that. But what we also do is, in terms of making sure, one of our roles is to make sure that the community knows what's happening in Burnet Woods. And so we decided early on that if we were going to start putting out a weekly list of whatever is happening in the park, it couldn't only include our programming. So I always make sure we acknowledge what other people are doing, including the yoga classes, the art center that wanted to develop the building in the park holds summer concerts in the bandstand, mm-hmm. and the community really loves those. So those are included on our weekly program. Mm-hmm. It's about getting word out to make sure people know what's happening and providing a legitimate resource for information. So every week I put out a calendar that says, this is what's going mm-hmm. on and here's how you can find out more.
Right. And listeners can see that calendar mm-hmm. if they go to your Facebook Preserve Burnet Woods page
mm-hmm.
Or to your website,
yes.
I presume.
Yes.
And what is the give us the website address if you can do that.
Super simple. www.preserveburnettwoods.org.
Okay. Well, that's easy to find. I wanted to talk about the Trailside Nature Center.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a beautiful little building, I guess built by the Work Projects Administration back in the early 40s.
1939.
Okay.
It just had its 80-year anniversary.
Well, it's a fantastic little building, sort of a prairie-style architecture, and it's park architecture, finest park architecture. tell us about that building and what's going on there.
A couple different things are happening. We're actually setting up for some really big changes to come to Burnett. This is exciting stuff that's happening. One of the other things coming out of last year's melee was the concept of an urban wilderness center in Trailside Nature Center. We kept coming around that there is this beautiful structure there, but the interior design, as pretty as the outside is, the interior design is a little lacking for usable space. It's mm-hmm. it's broken up in a very strange way inside in a couple of spaces. It is used primarily for grade school programming and day camps. So through the entire experience, it was never actually open to the public on any regular basis. So if you stopped in the park, you couldn't just stop by Trailside Nature Center. And that's something that the community has not appreciated for a long time. They want the building open. So that was one of our initiatives, was how do we make that happen? I'm trying to think of the best phrasing if when you hear me pause. Another good organization, the Camping and Education Foundation, does a lot of teaching urban youth to build canoes. Lightweight portable canoes. They go out into schools. They've been doing programs with Cincinnati Parks for years, and I have come to admire them greatly. They are a long-standing organization as well, but they also wanted to put a facility in Burnett Woods because, of course, there's a lake there, and they have a partnership with UC that's kind of a mentorship camping leadership program. So they felt like Burnett Woods was a natural fit for their program. And initially they suggested, there's a whole timeline of changes to their proposal, which we're grateful that they finally landed on a return to their original idea, which was, let's change Trailside Nature Center. Let's make that more usable. It needs maintenance. It needs updated to be wheelchair and disability accessible. That's a problem the park has. The building has no ramps, no elevator. You know, no accessibility issues. So let's take a look at all of that and then take a look at what the community wants and what the Urban Wilderness Center programming needs would be and redesign. And so when the park board voted against the Arts Center a year ago, they did vote to continue conversation for the Urban Wilderness Center. And we've been able to be part of those conversations as well, not necessarily as a guiding force, but as those concepts have developed, they've tried to keep us informed, keep us in the conversation and say, you know, hey, what do you see that's a problem here? So those are going to be big changes. When that building starts to change, it's going to be a little heartbreaking because of the history, but it's also a positive move towards longevity. Because that building, without the budget, without resources, it's not going to last forever. They have to be maintained, and Parks doesn't have the budget.
Right. So there is not a particular vision at this point for what's going to be in there, or do we know? Is it just evolving still?
I believe the concept is getting closer.
Okay.
But it's still evolving as far as we're concerned.
Okay.
That is something being handled by the park board with the Camping and Education Foundation to develop the center.
Okay. Well, I think whatever that needs to be utilized, certainly.
Yeah.
I can remember as a child going to that facility and having some birds. They had an old crow that would talk to you, and they had, you know, it was kind of a rehab center for wildlife at one time. And it was a fun place to visit as a child. I don't remember how often it was open or whether it was open all the time, but maybe it was just in the summertime that it was available, but certainly needs to be utilized for sure.
We had, over the summer, we were able to speak with Parks and the park director who heard our voice on that and said the building needs to be open. And with volunteers that we helped to recruit, we were able to get it open on Friday evenings for a few hours after work time hours and then during Saturday afternoons. And the agreement was that we would have one park staff member because our whole goal was not to drain parks budget and parks staffing with these efforts. So we were able to provide a secondary volunteer to be in the building so it was always safe and that we would help with the programming that would go along with that. And that was a huge accomplishment. We did that through, I think that stopped in late August or early September because the transition back into school programming started again. And then of course, weather changes. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. So I want my listeners to be able to tune into what you're doing. So go on to your Facebook page. Now, in terms of, is there a fundraising situation going on with your group, or what's happening there?
We need money, yes.
Okay.
That's a little complicated. We have programs that we ask for funding for. We do what's called, we piloted this, I'm really excited about this too, Nature Days, which is a kids programming initiative where we bring children from schools into the park to have a nature day, just like what used to be a field day where we played soccer and all of that as kids from my generation. Field day now involves learning to do water sampling and learning to date trees based on the large, we've got these beautiful old trees and some of them are deceased. So we have these tree rings
that we can look at and understand
habitat that way.
Right.
So we had that. They did learning to use an app called iNaturalist, which helps you identify things and log them with where you found them in the park. So we're bringing technology into it. They do artwork that's involved in nature. We did leaf etching at the last one. And then they play a little kickball, have fun, make some s'mores, like have a real fun day. We did that with a... In the spring, we tried that for the pilot with a group of children that was K through 6, and that was a bit much of age variety to take on. So we learned that lesson. And then we did, this last group was a group of 5th grade students from a nearby elementary school.
Now, you do this on your own, or do you have all volunteers to help with providing this?
We multi-tiered it. This is so cool.
Tell me.
So Preserve Burnett Woods mentors and works with a couple of the environmental studies groups of students over at UC.
Okay.
And it was originally one of the students' ideas. We give them, you know, show us what your ideas are. And one of the students looked at me and he said, what about a field day? And I looked back at him and I said, wow, that's really ambitious. How about we talk about what it's going to take to make that happen? And the student named Eric got so inspired by what he was working on, and he decided to really commit to doing it. And so it's us mentoring a UC classroom that is then working out all the details, doing all the arrangements, and they do all of the work. Like, I just show up on the scene, essentially, to make sure nothing goes wrong. But
the children come from where?
The last group came from Rockdale Elementary nearby. And then we're also working with one or two other schools. We're trying to bring them in, but we need funding to do that because insurance, busing, all of that takes money.
Which was my question. So tell us what you're doing to raise funds. How can listeners be involved?
There is a donate button on our website, and same with our Facebook page. We also have a P.O. box for people that are more comfortable sending a check, and that's P.O. box 20191, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45220.
You're a 501c3, so you're tax-exempt status, and people that donate to you can write that off on their income taxes.
Absolutely, and we are 100% volunteer, which I think is really important. So all of that money goes straight back into the programs and the work that we're doing in the park. Okay. And sometimes it's fun stuff, like Nature Days and getting to bring the kids in, and other things are maintaining the website and paying the insurance that are a little harder to raise money for, but it's money we have to have to do the fun stuff.
Cynthia, thank you so much for your time today and for telling us about what your organization is doing. I wish you the greatest luck.
Thank you.
Little Burnett Woods is dear to my heart.
It's pretty close to mine, too. Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to the Mark Fraley Podcast. If you've liked what you've heard, please be sure to subscribe to our feed on iTunes Podcasts and to like us on Facebook. Thank you.